number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You know the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right. I feel like I have to say this. So if you follow me, forgive me, okay? But I feel like I have to say this. This college basketball tournament is not college football. It doesn't matter how you get into this thing. When you're in it, that's it. All bets are off. Off we go. If I see one more tweet or one more comment about Syracuse losing to St. John's and Clemson, and that somehow invalidates their accomplishment, I'm going to lose it. I am. I can't take it. I am not a Syracuse homer. I've respected that program. I know they've gotten in trouble. I know Boeheim has done some pretty bad things enough to get him suspended. But they earned this Final Four berth because the draw just gave them teams they could beat. No fault of their own. I'm sorry they played Middle Tennessee State in the second round. What do you want? I'm sorry they played Gonzaga and not one of the more elite teams. I'm sorry. They beat Virginia when Virginia couldn't hold a 16-point lead in the second half. Syracuse is not going to be an unworthy champion because college basketball doesn't do it that way. If you think about the college football angle, you've heard me say this a million times. It is irrelevant in college basketball if the number one team, when it's all said and done, the team that wins the whole thing, is one of the best teams in the sport. It doesn't have to be. That's why the tournament is special. College football is the only sport that cares about this. Stop equating the two. Media members, stop equating it, because it doesn't work. Alabama wins a national championship in college football. Yes, they're one of the best teams in college football. They were one of the best teams all year. That's the way college football wants to work it. College basketball does not work that way. Never has. As long as this tournament's been around, it never has. It basically says, go through regular season. And then when it's all done, you're going to play in the wild, wacky tournament where we don't know anything can happen. Number ones could go down. Listen, losing in this NCAA tournament, every single coach should not have any expectation. Any coach that goes into this thing, even with a loaded team, should not be surprised that they're on the losing end. Right? Bill Self, Tony Bennett, right? These guys shouldn't have been all that shocked that they got beat. Mike Bray, same thing. Not all that shocked that he got beat. Dana Altman, same thing. When you're in this tournament, it's a one-game deal. It's not a best of seven. It's a one-game deal. Here comes Syracuse, taking advantage of the draw that they had, the opponents that they got to play, playing some good basketball at times. But overall, yeah, their season was questionable. And I'm not going back on that. And let me tell you, I'm not going to be one of those guys that comes on the air and goes, well, I was wrong about Syracuse. I guess they belonged in. That's lazy. Stick by your guns. If you're a host that says that, you're wrong. They weren't. They shouldn't have been in. Their resume was terrible. I'm sorry. Their resume was terrible. Yes, they won on the road at Duke, right? Sure, they beat Texas A&M, but their rest of their schedule stunk. But they got in. The committee thought they were worthy enough to get in. So they make their way through. And I won't take that away from them. Because, again, this is not college football. The travesty of Syracuse getting in this thing is not that big of a deal. What? It prevented another mediocre team from getting in? It's not like Kansas was kept out because Syracuse got in. Right? There were some teams that could have gotten in. Monmouth, right, was one of them. But again, would we be talking about Monmouth right now? Would we be talking about any of the teams that could have gotten in over Syracuse right now? It's a pretty good accomplishment for the Orange. But But it wasn't earth shattering. It didn't. This wasn't a travesty of justice that the committee got this team in and another team didn't. Again, we're not talking about Kansas missing out or North Carolina missing out or anybody else. College football, yeah, when Baylor and TCU didn't play in the playoff, I was pretty angry about it. Because I thought the committee had did both of those schools a disservice for the whole year, telling them that they were in the top four, and then they both blew out their opponents in the last week of the season, but just not quite good enough is because Ohio State was rising in the rankings and beat Wisconsin. In this situation, Syracuse got in over a team that was on the bubble, bubble team versus bubble team. You can make the argument back and forth. We did on this show. I still don't think that they should have gotten in over some other teams that got hosed. But nevertheless, we are here, Final Four, and that's where they're at. But just because they're in the Final Four doesn't take the committee off the hook. But it also doesn't take away from what Syracuse accomplished. So that's my rant on this. I have a friend of mine who laments, he's a media guy that I've worked with for years, he laments college sports for how they do this. He hates the college football playoff committee. He thinks it's a big joke, and this selection committee is also a big joke. Anything that's objective. I was like, I don't know what kind of world do you want to live in then? I keep telling him all the time. I was like, what do you want to do? You want a college football playoff to be going until July with 300 teams involved? Oh, but because we don't have the SoCon in here, well, we just don't quite have the true college football playoff. What are we supposed to do? Let every Division I team in the college basketball tournament run it till May? Again, we're determining a champion, but in the end, it's not supposed to be the be-all definitive story of the 2015-16 season. If Syracuse goes on to win this thing by, I don't know how, but how they beat North Carolina. But let's say they do. They didn't think they'd beat Virginia. If Syracuse goes on to win this thing, the college basketball world's not collapsing. Right? It's just a team that got hot and played well and took advantage of their draw. Again, not their fault they played Middle Tennessee State. Because I got to be honest with you, if they played Michigan State, I don't think they win. But they didn't have to. All right, let's go to Rob in Wisconsin. You're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
You got it. What's on your mind?
So, coming into March Madness, I thought, before everything happened, I was like, Louisville really needs to be in the tournament. And it's so coincidental that last year, Syracuse was the team that pulled themselves out of that tournament, right? And then this year, Louisville takes themselves out, which they would have made the tournament due to that resume. And maybe Syracuse doesn't get it if Louisville doesn't. You know, I just think that's a little bit ironic. That's all I wanted to say.
No, that's a very good point. That's a very good point, because you're right. If Louisville was in, that's another locked position. You go into the bubble teams and you don't have that open space. That's a very, very good point, Rob.
Yep.
That is well done. God, Adam, is this the same Rob that got caller of the week last, like, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Wow, he's pulling up two really good points.
Yeah.
Two excellent points, Rob. Nice job. Well done. That's a good point. Louisville doing Syracuse a favor. When are we going to say that? Jim Boeheim. Golly. I used to love Jim Boeheim. I don't know. My love affair for Jim Boeheim has gone down over the last couple of years. I don't know why. Maybe it's because of the shady deals that were going on at Syracuse. It got him in trouble in the first place. But he did a good job. He did a good job in this tournament. Got to give him credit. I give Syracuse all the credit in the world. I got a lot of friends who went to school there, and they're all like, I can't believe this. This is like a major surprise for me. I'm just riding this all the way to the end. I mean, I watched Syracuse when I was younger, man. They lost to Indiana. They lost to Rhode Island. They lost to Richmond in the early 90s. I mean, I've gone through a lot with Syracuse over the years. To see this team get to the Final Four, the kind of path they had to take, Middle Tennessee. Who'd they beat? Dayton, Middle Tennessee State, Gonzaga, and now Virginia?
Yes.
All right, they're not, it's not exactly a rogue gallery of fine victories. Dayton was pretty flawed coming in. Middle Tennessee State was playing on gas. Right? Gonzaga was a lower seed than they were. And Virginia was a top team that they beat in the second half. Could you make the case that Syracuse had, like, 10 minutes of really good basketball?
Oh, yeah.
I think Daniel Teal from Daily Press in Virginia made that point. We'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour. All right, coming up next, Adam's news of the day. We'll react to it as he went around the sports world and came up with some interesting nuggets of news. Plus, I want to get to Kevin Harlan's Easter reference on TBS tonight that had Twitter all abuzz. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, David Teal joins us in 15 minutes. We'll talk to ACC Hoops with him. He's from the Daily Press in Virginia. What the heck went wrong with the Cavaliers tonight? Also, how good is North Carolina? Did Notre Dame give them their best shot? What does he think about a Syracuse-North Carolina matchup? And what about Mike Krzyzewski? What is his thoughts on Coach K? That's David Teal. That's coming up in 15 minutes. But right now, Adam with his news of the day, a new segment we're debuting on the show where Adam tells us his news of the day, and then we chat about it. What's first story in the coffers there, my friend?
Well, with it being Easter, I wanted to kind of do a few Easter stories at least. And this one happened in Connecticut. I don't have a town in the story, but it happened in Connecticut. It's the annual Pez Easter egg hunt. Pez the candy.
Is this Pez the candy?
Yes, like, Pez the candy.
Pez the candy, where you open up the mouth of like Darth Vader and get a nice little sugary candy.
Correct. It pops it out. And then, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So they do this every year, and they have three hunting fields, is kind of how they put it. And they lay out 10,000 eggs between the three. And then they have different age groups for kids to come, and they can find a bunch of eggs, and kind of that's how it goes. Well, they have three different start times for the different age groups, so they don't get it doesn't get all crazy, and the older kids are stealing from the younger kids and stuff. Well, some parents decided that they didn't want to wait, so it turned into basically a free-for-all of thousands of people just trampling each other trying to get these eggs.
Have you ever taken your kids to one of these things?
No, I almost kind of refuse to.
Okay, it is. I've done that with both of my kids. It is a level of Dante's hell that I will never, ever forget. These things are awful. And no matter how these organizations try to run these Easter egg hunts, they never turn out the way you want. And the only thing you can do is ban the parents from being on the egg field, but that's almost impossible. These parents are lunatics. Look, I didn't want my kid. My little girl and I are going out there getting eggs. You want your kid to have a basket full of eggs. You don't want all the kids eating them up. You don't want your kid to get stiffed. So you do whatever you got to do, and that means just punch, kick, throw kids down to the ground, rip their baskets apart. I mean, it's an awful, awful thing. It's terrible.
Yeah, there was a four-year-old was quoted in the story. She said,
wonderful.
Somebody pushed me over and take my eggs. It's very rude of them, and they broke my bucket.
Oh!
I mean, that's a four-year-old.
Come on!
There was several bloody noses to kids just from being hit in all the chaos.
Oh, my God.
And so the lot of people complaining on their Facebook page and stuff like that. So
I think everyone who has an Easter egg hunt, churches, companies, towns, I think they should all rally and say, you know what? We're not doing this ever again.
Right.
You guys blew it. You guys had all your chances. We've given you plenty of chances to do this right. But now guess what? None of your kids get eggs. You want your kids to get eggs? Guess what? Do it at your house. We're not doing it anymore. You know how long it takes to fill these stupid things? Hours. We've got volunteers here, and now we've got kids with broken noses. Good. Happy Easter. Goodbye. That's what I'd do.
That's what I'd do, too.
I'd say forget it. No, go do it at your house.
Yeah. That's how I do it. I do, you know, and we used to do it as a family, so there'd be like 5-6 of us, and we'd all make sure we got the same amount of eggs,
yeah,
which was
right.
Kind of stupid, but
you know, when I was a kid, we were at an Easter egg hunt when I was a child, when I was like 6, and my 5-year-old brother, a year younger than me, he found the golden egg that got them this really cool prize, and I didn't get a golden egg, and
didn't like it.
Here we are close to 35 years later, and I'm still bitter that my brother found the golden egg, got like a big Easter chocolate Easter bunny or something.
Right.
I don't remember what he got, but he got something really awesome, and I didn't get anything. scarred me for life. All right. Story number two.
Next. Okay, Matt Stoney is a competitive eater.
Oh, I know Matt Stoney. He's
right.
Like,
is he the one that won the last one?
I think he's the Coney's champion.
Yeah, I think he is the champion.
I think he is.
Well, today he sat down in one sitting and ate 200 peeps.
Oh, really?
Yes, which is a world record now.
I can't eat like one.
No, I can't eat a bite. Nibble off a piece of it. I can't do it.
I think peeps are the most disgusting thing on the planet.
There's a video, and I can't get myself to watch the video because I know how they taste, and watching him do that will make me sick. But
okay,
it's on YouTube if you want to go see it.
All right, the thing I don't like is marshmallow has a tendency to expand.
Yes.
Like it's an expansive food group. So I'm wondering if he ate the 200 peeps and then just like, you know, Mike Myers and Goldfinger movies or whatever it was. Because I'm thinking those peeps would just expand in that belly of yours to a point where you're just dying.
You'd think that'd be a good way though for a competitive eater to stretch his stomach.
God.
Just eat a bunch of marshmallows or peeps. And
are peeps the worst Easter candy in the world?
I think peeps are the worst candy in the world.
Ever. I used to love Cadbury cream eggs when I was a
kid.
Yeah,
I remember those.
And I'm not a big fan of them anymore, but my wife thinks I'm a big fan.
Gosh,
so
I haven't had one in a long time.
She gives me like three or four of them in my basket. And then she'll go, how come you haven't eaten your Cadbury cream eggs? And I'm like, I don't know. I haven't gotten around to it. I just lost the taste of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not as appealing as when I was a kid. I loved them. I love those things.
I've had a few different foods like that where I just lose the taste for a while and then it comes back. And
yeah. But peeps, if I get peeps in Easter, they go right to the trash.
Yeah, there's no point in peeps.
I told my wife, I bought my wife peeps one time. She flipped. She goes, I don't eat these. These are terrible. I go, I'm sorry. I thought you did. She goes, I thought that was one of the first things we told each other when we were dating. We both ate peeps. How could you forget that? I'm sorry. I'm a dumb person.
Just grabbed whatever was there.
All right. Story number three.
In L.A. today, there was a car chase. It ended in the middle. Yeah, surprising.
Right.
It ended in the middle of an intersection. They kind of blocked off the car and used the pit maneuver to kind of spin it out. Well, the lady got out of the car, a heavier set lady. Well, she decided she didn't want to be done yet. So she tried to jump in a cop car that was right there full. It had two cops in the back and one in the front seat. And she tried to drive away, but she was ultimately tackled and taken to the ground by about six officers.
Okay, so she tried to jump in a car that already had three police officers in it.
Correct.
Just because the driver's side was vacant?
Yes, the driver's side was open, so she thought, you know what, let's go for it. And it didn't work out.
Oh, now, if she had gotten away, let's say she was in that car, and just for the police let her go for half a mile. Could the police then go, yeah, kidnapping.
Yeah,
on top
definitely.
Of everything that you've done.
100%.
You've kidnapped three cops.
Yes.
I don't know how the law works, but I'm thinking the cops
kidnapping.
Just sat there and went, let's ride this out for a little bit.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right. Now you've got kidnapping on your pile of list of things that we're going to get you for.
Yeah, they could definitely do that because you get into a car with a baby or a child.
Oh, yeah.
And
right?
You drive 2 feet. It's considered kidnapping.
Yeah. Isn't that why, like, when criminals carjack cars, they'll take, like, baby seats and they'll just it's not because they're moral people.
Right.
But because they just don't want to add kidnapping a child to the long list of things that is going to send them to prison for a long time. Was she intoxicated on drugs or anything
yes.
like that?
Yes, she was. Right. That's so why she was running, supposedly.
She's like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to take this car. It's just there. I'll just grab it. What were the cops in the back seat doing? Just like, oh, God. Lady, pull over.
Who knows? She didn't even make it in. She was just tackled right into the door, which was a great tackle by one of the cops.
Great job. Great job, LAPD. Well done. Good stuff. Adam's news of the day. Coming up, David Teal will join us. Daily Press in Virginia. Still haven't figured out how the Cavaliers lost to the Syracuse Orange, but he covers the ACC and particularly Virginia, so he would know, and he's got that answer next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D. On the third shift,
it's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D again here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to look at the Final Four in Houston, Texas. And I kept thinking to myself, all right, you know, after the first couple of rounds when we were getting these upsets and things were really happening, it was going to settle in and we were going to pretty much have a chalk Final Four with a couple of ones and twos. Syracuse kind of blows that up after they beat Virginia, but North Carolina can added to that. They were your number one seed that advanced. That's two ACC teams in the Final Four, and David Teal covers that conference for the Daily Press in Virginia. Joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, David?
I'm doing great. You, Tony?
All right, I'll start off with what went right for Syracuse, this 29-8 run to close out the game. How did they erase a 16-point deficit in that second half?
Two things. Their full-court press, which sped Virginia up and created some turnovers. And number two, Malachi Richardson, the freshman guard, turned into the NBA talent that many believe he is. He was slashing to the bucket. He was making threes off the dribble. He was unstoppable in the last 6 to 8 minutes.
Could Tony Bennett have done anything? Could he have adjusted anything to have stopped this?
Perhaps. My one tactical gripe with Coach Bennett in the final stages was when Virginia was down four, and DeJuan Coleman of Syracuse grabbed an offensive rebound with about a minute and change to go. And at that point, I'm thinking they need to foul right now to extend the game. And he allowed Syracuse to milk more clock. And Virginia did indeed get a stop. But by that point, it's inside 30 seconds, and the Cavaliers are pretty much toast.
I want to ask about this, the conference as a whole from Syracuse's perspective. A lot of people didn't like the fact that Syracuse was in. Did you think their resume deserved an admission into this? I mean, it's irrelevant now. They're in the Final Four. But, I mean, give us an idea from the conference perspective. Why were people hating on Syracuse to get in this thing?
Well, I mean, I'm an amateur bracketologist like a lot of people. I had Syracuse in. Despite the late season swoon that saw it lose five of its last six, and lost three times to Pittsburgh, which in, to some people's minds was a questionable at-large selection as well. But Syracuse beat Texas A&M on a neutral floor. Syracuse won at Duke. Those were its signature wins, and I thought given the weak at-large board was enough to merit selection.
Were you surprised by this outcome? I mean, given Syracuse and Jim Boeheim, he knows how to coach in these things, were you surprised by this outcome?
I was surprised by the outcome. I was stunned even more by how it happened. I mean, a 15-point deficit against Virginia with 9 minutes to go, that's like trailing somebody else by 30, given the way Virginia defends and takes care of the basketball. But the Cavaliers played completely out of character in those final 10 minutes.
David Teal joins us from the Daily Press from Virginia as we dissect the two ACC games in the Elite Eight on Sunday. So, David, from a perspective of how you've seen Syracuse this year and how they're playing now, is this a very good team that has finally woken up, or is this a team that's playing a little above their head right now and doing that at the very right time?
Well, I don't think it's playing above its head because Syracuse didn't face a gauntlet by any stretch in getting to the Elite Eight. And then it played 10 great minutes against the number one seed that collapsed. So I'm not sure that Syracuse is a really good team that's found its stride. In fact, I think Syracuse will meet its demise on Saturday in Houston.
And that team that they're playing is North Carolina. From what you've known and seen of North Carolina, was this the typical Tar Heel game in this beat of Notre Dame?
They are. You talk about a team that has hit its stride. I mean, the Tar Heels are playing great. And if you discount the final just dribble out the last 10 seconds or so, Tar Heels scored on 19 of their last 20 possessions. I mean, they have been so good on offense of late. And while during the regular season they were among the nation's worst three-point shooting teams, all of a sudden they have found their stride shooting the three. Joel Berry second, was the MVP of the ACC tournament. Marcus Paige in the regional semifinal against Indiana went off from three. I believe he made half a dozen. When Carolina makes threes to go along with its inside firepower with Bryce Johnson and company, unbeatable.
If they're shooting 61%, there's no way to stop Notre Dame, right? I'm looking at, I mean, North Carolina, right? I mean, if they're shooting that good, how do you beat the Tar Heels?
You don't.
Yeah.
I mean, because they are playing really well defensively, and they're so deep, and they're so athletic. No, you're just not going to beat them when they're playing that way.
And from Notre Dame's side of things, I mean, all right, so they lose to North Carolina, and I think people would have predicted that at the beginning of the game. They shoot pretty well. They gave North Carolina their best shot. Did you see a better game from the Irish in this loss than they usually are this season?
No, I thought Notre Dame would play really well. It was on a nice roll, nice three-game roll in the tournament. You know, back-to-back Elite Eights. You know, had played Kentucky last year very, very well in a regional final. So I very much expected Mike Bray's bunch to acquit itself well today.
I do want to ask you this about Mike Krzyzewski. Did you find it out of character what he said at the end of that Oregon game? I know he apologized for it. Was that out of character for Mike Krzyzewski in a tournament to say something like that to a kid that has to think about another game?
Well, I thought that was a little out of character, but I thought what was more out of character was the fact that he didn't own up to it when asked about it in the press conference afterward, and only came clean, so to speak, a day later. That's what I found to be out of character.
David Teal, again, Daily Press in Virginia on the ACC. You like North Carolina to beat Syracuse? You like North Carolina to win the whole thing?
I really do. I think North Carolina will beat Syracuse. I think Villanova is better equipped to play against North Carolina because I'm really impressed with the way Villanova is defending, and you really have to be good on that end to deal with Tar Heels. But hey, you know, the sooner that Buddy Hield, and we have the player of the year, and he's shooting like Hield is, you know, maybe they could do it, but in the end, I think Carolina cuts down the next Monday night.
So we may have an ACC champion. Overall, was the season very good for the conference? How would you equate the way we saw the entire body of work?
Well, they put seven teams in the tournament, which matches its high. Would have been eight if not for Louisville self-imposed sanctions. We'll win 19 or 20 games, which is a record for the most wins by a conference in an NCAA tournament. It has been a wildly successful season on the court for the Atlantic Coast Conference.
David, always good talking to you, my friend. Good sight, good insight on the ACC. Appreciate it.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
And it was a good year for the ACC. Like you said, he had seven teams in, could have got Louisville in. Maybe that kept Syracuse out, but good year for the conference. And to have a day like they did on Friday, where they owned that entire day, and then to see Sunday, same kind of deal, own that entire day. With Syracuse and North Carolina going to the Final Four, and the conference has guaranteed at least one team to play for the championship. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Your thoughts on the Final Four? As I said earlier, it's chalk pretty much, except for Syracuse. You got two twos, a one, 31 combined losses of the teams. In a year where nobody dominated college basketball. Coming up next, talk Kevin Harlan and his little comment at the end of the broadcast equating Syracuse with the meaning of Easter and the buzz about that, plus more thoughts on the basketball and a little movie review. That's all coming up next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Did you hear what Kevin Harlan said at the end of the Syracuse game today?
Yes.
Oh, so funny. Kevin Harlan, in describing the Syracuse Orange and their comeback, against Virginia said that Syracuse came back from the dead on Easter Sunday. Oh, did Twitter have a good time with that? I was like, let's not go overboard here. Let's just chill out. But boy, people were really angry at Kevin Harlan evoking the Easter meaning to Syracuse's comeback against Virginia. Oh, the instant reaction of Twitter. You just can't. I mean, you could bottle it up and sell it. They were livid. Whether or not he should apologize. But then I saw a poll that said most people thought it was actually kind of cool. I don't know. I could see people being offended by that.
See, I'm not an overly religious person. I'm not really a religious person that much. So I didn't really find too much wrong with it, but I get where people are definitely coming from with it.
Yeah, like if you have a religion that, you know, it's because it's based on Jesus rising from the dead, and all exactly. of a sudden he's like, "Nah, let's throw Syracuse and like equate the two, like make it like even." I can see where people go, wait a minute, okay. Because I'm like you. I mean, I'm kind of a lapsed Catholic. You know, I kind of have had my ups and downs. But I certainly do understand why people would be like, hey, wait a minute. Okay, that's a little out of bounds. Do you think Kevin Harlan made that up on the spot, or do you think Kevin Harlan had that planned, the whole comeback? Like, as he's watching the comeback, he's thinking to himself, boy, if they pull this off, I want to have a line.
Yeah, I think you kind of plan that. I bet you he might have even had it planned before the game. Like if something crazy happens like that, that you know he's got that in his back pocket.
Thinking I'm going to go Easter.
Right, it's
I'm
Easter.
Gonna go Easter route.
Let's go with it.
Because I know Jim Nantz for the Masters, he gets an idea of on Sunday where the leaderboard is, and sort of comes up with lines for every single player that could win the Masters. And then when they do win the Masters, he'll say it. He'll say like, all right, looks like Tiger could win it. Looks like Phil could win it. And If David Duval wins it or Jason Day wins it, this is what I'll say. And I wonder if Kevin Harlan, as the comeback was coming, said, this is too good. Because when you hear it, it's almost like he's like, oh, I can't wait to say this. Come back for the dead on Easter Sunday.
Yeah, it's like he had it loaded in his gun, just like ready to go.
Just ready to rock. Oh, God, that's funny. That's funny. I know people are offended by that, and I want to be sensitive to it. It is a religious thing, but Kevin Harlan probably knew exactly what he was walking himself into. He probably was like, "Yeah, I'll just say it. See how Twitter reacts to it." It was almost immediate.
What'd you think of the broadcast overall? The broadcast teams. I tell you who really annoyed me is Reggie Miller.
Reggie Miller is a little bit different in the college hoops world than he is when he was doing NBA games.
I mean, watching that Syracuse game, he just kept telling me how Tyler Roberson is such a great athlete and how he goes after every single ball. He told me that for 7 straight minutes. Every time that he even flashed in the screen, he's basically said the exact same thing about Tyler Roberson, and that's all he really talked about.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of
Reggie
Miller.
He tends to do that. He tends to pick one thing and then just hammer it home for a good more than a half of the half.
I will tell you, I do like the Jim Nantz, Grant Hill, Bill Rafferty
yes.
combination. That
yeah.
works. That's working out great.
And I've also liked Steve Smith.
Steve Smith's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I know there's Billy Packard, when he was doing the games, was not a funny broadcaster, but he was really serious and took the game seriously and was really fearless in some of the things he said. And I think that is missing, but I don't necessarily miss him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't necessarily miss him. I do miss a little bit more of an edgy, this is the reality broadcast, because Billy Packer had no problem saying, this is a mess. This is a disaster. And one of the things Billy Packer had problems with is when there would be a blowout, He would tell people there would be no way a team could come back, and they didn't like that because it was like, hey, why would anybody watch if you're basically telling them there's no reason for them to watch? But he had like a really good edge to him that seems to be missing. But Rafferty is really good.
Yes.
He's really fun to listen to.
He is.
So I really enjoy him. And Grant Hill is better than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah,
he's been doing this now for a couple of years, but he's better than I thought, and so he's doing a pretty good job.
And I do like Kevin Harlan. I like Kevin Harlan
like
a
Kevin
lot
Harlan
of what
too.
He does.
Yeah,
And just, I don't know about his end of game lines.
I just think this was one of those things where he said, you know what, screw it, I'm going for it, and just said, I'm going to do it. He might have got the backing of his producer. He might, or the people that run the TV. He might have told them during the break he was going to say it. And if they said, you know what, if this ends up being a Syracuse win, go ahead and say it. We'll get some ink for it. I'm sure we're not going to get that much hate. You know, it's
and it's not like they're
going to storm the gates of TBS.
Exactly. Right? We're not going to be talking about this in 2 days.
Right. They're going to make noise on Twitter.
Yeah.
USA Today will write about it like they did. Some people will make it like, wow, what was he thinking? But then it'll disappear. So I'm wondering if his people said, yeah, go for it. What the heck? Let's just throw it out there. Because it just for him, it was probably too perfect. It was probably like, look, it's Easter Sunday. Look at this comeback. I can make this analogy. It'll probably spike up some interest. Like, these games are on TBS now. They're no longer on CBS.
Yeah, we have
man.
No more CBS games.
That's it. These are on TBS. And I'm telling you, even though you still get the diehard basketball fans watching, that is a big deal. When you take a sporting event off network television and you throw them on a cable channel, I don't care what that cable channel is, that's a big deal. And so I'm sure he's like, yeah, let's give this some run. I mean, look how much we make fun of True TV. Every year we make the same True TV jokes, right? Oh, True TV, can't find them. Oh, True TV, Carbonaro effect is still on the air. Oh, True TV, are they even still doing basketball? Yes, they are.